Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In late March, something rare happened in the city of St. Louis. An abortion was performed at a Planned Parenthood clinic here, the first since the U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade in 2022, and a decision that triggered Missouri's ban on abortion in almost all circumstances. But the restoration of abortion access in Missouri turned out to be brief. Last week, Missouri's Supreme Court effectively brought the ban back by halting two earlier court decisions that had allowed abortions to restart. It meant that state laws banning abortion are back in force, despite the fact that 4 months ago, voters approved Amendment 3, which enshrined the right to abortion in the state constitution. It's a familiar development for doctors and patients here in Missouri, and for Planned Parenthood, part of a years-long fight that has only grown more entrenched. To talk about this moment for Missouri abortion access and its proponents, I'm joined by Dr. Margaret Baum, the Chief Medical Officer for Planned Parenthood Great Rivers. Dr. Baum, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much, Elaine, for having me.
Now, on May 27th, the Missouri Supreme Court ordered a judge in Kansas City to lift two rulings that halted enforcement of the state's near-total ban on abortion, and those were by Judge Jerry Jiang, and she ruled that the ban violates the Constitution, and then also that some of the licensing requirements for abortion clinics are discriminatory and therefore effectively ban abortion. What was your first reaction after hearing about the ruling last week on May 27th?
Right. So let me go take you back a little bit to February when we had Judge Jiang's initial ruling, in which she supported our ability to perform procedural abortion in Missouri. So at that, during that ruling, she lifted those restrictions so that we and our Planned Parenthood affiliate on the other side of the state could begin to provide procedural abortions. And so we did. We brought back abortion access to Missouri. So what happened last week was not a change in her ruling. It was a decision by the Missouri Supreme Court to look at a technicality of her ruling. So again, the Missouri Supreme Court did not say that her ruling was incorrect or that it should be changed. It was just looking at, again, technical language that she used and asked her to reconsider that. But because we, of course, comply with the law, that did halt our ability to provide procedural abortions here in Missouri.
So, I mean, hearing the ruling, was it a surprise?
Yes and no, right? So what happened in November is important to remember, right? That Missouri, the people of Missouri said loud and clear, we want abortion to be accessible, right? That's what we learned when Amendment 3 was passed in November of last year. And so we know that that's what the people of Missouri want. I know personally that that's what patients want. I know that that's what my colleagues that both provide abortions and provide care for patients in Missouri want. So yes, in the sense that now the Supreme Court and the state of Missouri is making it, again, impossible to follow the will of the people. That is, you know, shocking and disappointing. However, I've practiced in Missouri for many years, and I have dealt with many abortion restrictions, and we can talk about that later as well. So then on that hand, it doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is it that happened then with patients and those needing care, you know, on May 27th, on May 28th, what did that mean for them?
Yeah, so this is the reality, right? So decisions that are made in the courts and decisions that are made at the legislative houses affect patients, individual patients. So I immediately, as soon as I was told by the lawyers that this was happening, by our lawyers, we contacted our patient services staff and said, okay, we have to immediately halt procedures. We had abortion appointments scheduled, so we had to take down those appointments. Patients had to be contacted. Patients had to be told they could no longer have their procedures as scheduled in Missouri. Now, thankfully, we are close to Illinois, so patients were offered appointments in Illinois. or, you know, in Kansas. But yes, appointments were canceled and patients had to be rescheduled.
Mm-hmm. You have had experience as an OBGYN now for a total of about 20 years. Mm-hmm. And 15 of those you were practicing, I believe, both here in St. Louis and on the other side of the river. So what you are observing right now, what is happening, is there anything that is new or is it sort of the same thing over again? And what is the fallout because of that?
It is. It is the same thing over and over again. And it's exhausting, I think, is really it's exhausting for physicians and it's exhausting for patients. So what I know from my many years of providing full service gynecology to patients, again, in both Missouri and Illinois, is that patients don't want politicians in their exam rooms. Patients want to make decisions with their physicians in exam rooms and not at the courthouse. And I've known that for years. Mm-hmm. And so what I have seen is increasing restrictions on my ability to make decisions with patients, increasing laws that limit my ability to provide the best, most evidence-based, appropriate care with patients. And we have seen that, you know, on the Missouri side. Now, as you mentioned, we are fortunate enough to be close to Illinois, and I have provided care in Illinois for many years as well. And Illinois actually has sort of moved in the opposite direction to enshrine the right to reproductive freedom. And that's why we provide the vast majority of our care for abortion care in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Baum, you were named the chief medical officer in April, but you've been working in that role as interim medical director since February. And I understand that you performed one of Missouri's last abortions before the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision in 2022. What was that like for you as a physician who's spent decades doing this work?
Yes. So I did perform one of the last abortions in 2022 before the Dobbs decision was overturned. And we knew that that was coming, right? That the writing was on the wall. And so as we continued to provide abortion in the state of Missouri, over the years, Missouri enacted more and more restrictions. So it became more and more difficult. So even before Dobbs, it was very limited, the amount of services that we were providing in Missouri. Though, to be clear, it was very important also for us to continue to provide those services to the people of Missouri. So I was raised in Missouri. I went to school in Missouri. I practiced for many years. I have raised my family here. So health of Missouri citizens is very important to me. And so when the Dobbs decision came down, Missouri was the first state to ban abortion. We have a trigger ban. So mm-hmm. immediately we, as I said, of course, we comply with the law. So we ceased providing abortions in Missouri. But that was devastating as somebody who cares about, I live here. I care about, you know, the health of my patients and my fellow Missourians.
Mm-hmm. In the introduction, we described what has happened around abortion as being a political and a legal issue. Mm-hmm. There's been some footballing, if we could call it that. And there are public officials who are celebrating the recent decision by the Missouri Supreme Court. And that includes Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. And Bailey has said that these state laws are needed to protect patients and to make sure Planned Parenthood doesn't use what he calls, quote, moldy equipment and unqualified medical practitioners and have facilities that are similar to hospitals. Is Bailey accurate here in how he's characterizing Planned Parenthood's equipment, for example?
Certainly not. So, of course, I don't even think that's worth responding to, right? Of course, our equipment is clean and sterilized. And I think the important thing to remember when we're talking about licensing, because that's one of the things that Andrew Bailey does focus on, is that facilities aren't licensed, physicians are licensed, right? And so, of course, as a physician, I am a licensed physician. Malpractice, I carry malpractice. If there are complications, those things reflect upon me as the physician, not the facility. And so in order to provide, again, to provide care, I am licensed by the state as a physician, as well as are the other physicians and the advanced practice clinicians that I work with at Planned Parenthood. There's no exception for Planned Parenthood. We're not any different than physicians, you know, that work at any other facility. And so, yes, there is a difference between hospital care and Planned Parenthood care, and that's appropriate. There are things that I do in a hospital that should absolutely be done in a hospital. I should not be providing hysterectomies, and we certainly don't at Planned Parenthood. Those require an operating room, general anesthesia, laparoscopic equipment. However, what Andrew Bailey would like us not to do is provide abortions at our Planned Parenthood facility, and that's where this argument breaks down. So we provide, and many physicians provide, very similar procedures to abortion in terms of time, in terms of anesthesia requirements, in terms of risk. And those procedures are not subject to these licensing requirements. For example, at Planned Parenthood, I and my partner all the time perform vasectomies. Vasectomies are, in many sense, a very similar procedure to an abortion. It's an outpatient procedure. It's done with local anesthetic. Actually, vasectomies take longer than abortions. And yet, there's no requirement for that, no regulation and no licensing requirement for that procedure.
So the license requirements for abortion providers, you know, opponents of these laws only exist to ban abortion. They say, you know, these do not make patients safer. Why is that the case?
So these laws are what are called trap laws, so targeted regulations on abortion providers. So these are laws that only apply to abortion procedures, which, again, you know, myself, I perform all sorts of procedures that do not have restrictions, that, again, have a very similar risk profile to abortions. And so what these laws do is prevent access for patients and make things more difficult for physicians. And that is ultimately the goal of these laws being passed by our opponents to abortion. So, for example, Missouri has passed, you know, many, many trap laws, including like a 72-hour waiting period. We know that people don't change their mind. We know that people come to abortion with a thoughtful decision. So making somebody wait 72 hours, making somebody come back for a second appointment to sign consent forms, and I could go on and on with the trap laws that Missouri has enacted, doesn't make abortion any safer, doesn't change people's minds. It just puts up barriers to care. And that's the opposite of what I want to do as a physician, is present barriers to people getting health care.
Now, last month, Erin Grant, who's the co-executive director for the Abortion Care Network, told NPR that it's gotten more expensive to provide care, it's gotten more dangerous to provide care, and it's harder to provide care, quote, when you're expected to be in the clinic and then on the state house steps, and also speaking to your representatives and trying to find somebody who will fix your roof or paint your walls, who's not going to insert their opinion about health care rights. What do you make of Erin Grant's point, Dr. Baum? I mean, the kind of pressure that this all puts on you and other health workers, what is the consequence of that? What are the implications?
Well, I think there's legitimacy to that, but I think there's another side to that as well. So providing abortion care, providing really any type of health care, but I think specifically abortion care, also comes with great privilege. So I have performed thousands of abortions in my career, and I can tell you that patients come to abortion making a thoughtful decision. And so being able to be with people that when they are making this decision, that often can be, sometimes it's a difficult decision, sometimes it's not a difficult decision, but it is a decision that people have put time and thought into. And so being able to be with patients and their families at that moment of this decision and to be able to provide this care, that's what keeps me providing abortion care, because that is important. And the reality is we are losing abortion providers because of these restrictions. People don't want to train to be abortion providers in states in which it's not available, or they don't want to be trained to be OBGYNs in states in which abortion training is not available. So we're going to lose providers. So being able to provide this very important service, even when, or especially when there are less and less options for folks, is very important to me.
And the consequences of that, I mean, what is the impact of losing the potential to train medical professionals who can do these procedures safely.
Yeah, so that's really upsetting to me as a physician. I was fortunate enough to have great mentors and great teachers who taught me how to do these procedures. And part of my job is to teach. I operate with the BJC residents to do surgeries. And that's an important part of being an attending physician, especially somebody like me. I'm not going to say I'm old, but I've been practicing for a long time and I have a lot of experience. And part of that is sharing that with the generations to come, because I want what I have learned to be able to be passed on so that more and more patients can be helped. That's always the goal, right, is to expand care rather than restrict care. And teaching is one way in which we can absolutely expand care. And these abortion restrictions make that increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm. For someone who is thinking, you know, we do live right now, we are near Illinois, and people in other parts of the state can go to Kansas. Like, why is it that they can't just go there? Why is it necessary for abortions to be accessible in Missouri?
Sure. I think the first thing is that Missouri demands this, right? We know that the people of Missouri passed Amendment 3 and they want access. So I think that's the first thing, is that the people have spoken and we need to respect that. Secondly, there is something about traveling outside of a state that is a barrier for folks, even if it's not far, right? Our Fairview Heights location is 20 minutes, you know, across the river. However, for a lot of people, that may be as difficult as getting two or three states away because of transportation, because of childcare issues. And there is just a barrier to know that you can't get the care that you need, that your physician is, you know, agreeing that you need, in the state in which you live.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking today with Dr. Margaret Baum about the status of abortion access in this region. Dr. Baum is the chief medical officer for Planned Parenthood Great Rivers and has 2 decades of experience as an OBGYN. One of the aspects of care has to do with miscarriage. And I understand it's not just abortion services that have moved to Illinois, but miscarriage treatment too. Why is that the case?
Well, so miscarriage management is exactly the same as abortion care. So miscarriages can be managed surgically or medically, exactly like we can perform abortion care surgically or medically. It's exactly the same medications, the same instruments, the same procedure. So we cannot continue to provide, without providing abortion care, both services in Missouri. We had to move most of our staff, because of logistics, to our Illinois location. So staff, equipment, medications, all of those things. So that means that I can't keep, just a small amount of staff in Missouri for the rare cases of miscarriage when we need to focus all of our attention on providing abortion access. So that means, should a patient present in Missouri, and yes, legally I could perform an aspiration procedure for a miscarriage in Missouri, but I can't because my staff, by necessity, has moved to Illinois.
Okay. This has been a difficult year for Planned Parenthood, and in other states, clinics have been closing. According to a report by NPR, since last year, 24 clinics have closed, including 17 in states where abortion is still legal. So is there a chance, Dr. Baum, for similar closures in Missouri?
So I think it's important to remember that Planned Parenthoods take care of all patients, right? Our motto is care no matter what. But most Planned Parenthoods do see a significant portion of Medicaid patients and uninsured patients as well. And we know there is increasing pressure both from state legislators as well as from the federal government to cut the funding to these programs that take care of the most marginalized communities. And so, yes, some Planned Parenthoods have had to make difficult financial decisions because of this external pressure and the inability to get funding to care for these patients. So for better or worse, Missouri has been a very difficult state to operate in, actually for much longer than some of these other states. We have not been funded by Missouri Medicaid for a number of years. Mm-hmm. However, we continue to care for Medicaid patients because that is part of our mission. Again, care no matter what. So we are already operating in that space in which we do not get Medicaid funding. And so we do not have any plans to curtail services at this time.
Mm-hmm. So there are some very real challenges you're looking at in terms of capacity, in terms of resources. Hannah Harriman is a former clinic worker at a Planned Parenthood that closed in Michigan in April. And Harriman told NPR about the special level of trust that it takes to work with patients, that is, in reproductive care. And she said, sometimes you cry with them and you laugh with them. And when they have that trust, they keep coming back for care. I think this really gets at what you're talking about in terms of the difference between a transaction and between receiving care. To be able to interact with patients in that way, to laugh when they need, to cry with them, how is it that you establish that kind of trust, particularly when there are so many ups and downs with what is legal and what is not?
No, that's exactly right. And we see that with our patients. I think there is a deliberate move to create confusion from the folks that don't want us to be able to provide this care. Patients are confused, and that is on purpose. Laws change all the time. People don't understand that it's okay to go from one state to another to provide care that you need. And so, again, I know I go back to this over and over again, but this is the guiding light for Planned Parenthood, is that it is care no matter what. So no matter, you know, what confusion is out there, we are here to provide care. So some of the ways we do that is we are very active in, you know, social media, putting out messages saying, remember, you can still get, even with a ban in Missouri, you can still get care in Illinois. That's really important for us to let patients know that. And I think the second thing that is really important to my work and the work that we provide at Planned Parenthood, the care that we provide, is trust. So one of the first things I always do with a patient is say, I trust your decision. Patients, again, come to me for all sorts of things. Like, abortion is only a small portion of what I do. We provide menopause care, we provide surgery, we provide sterilizations. And so when a patient presents for any of those things, I say, I trust you to make the best decision. You're here to ask my expert opinion, and I'm going to give you, you know, opinions and options. But after that, I trust you to make the best decision for yourself and your family. And I think by making that our, you know, our North Star, our guiding light, that really does allow patients to be able to trust us, right? If we're giving trust to them, they can trust us to provide, again, the most expert care that we can and help give them the full range of options.
Mm-hmm. As we close, is there something that you would like for people to understand, given where we are now with this reinstatement of the abortion ban? What should people be doing? How can they be prepared for maybe more changes?
Yeah, I think we do need to be on our toes all the time, especially in Missouri. I think the thing I'd like folks to know is that we provide the full gamut of sexual and reproductive care at Planned Parenthood. So, you know, it's not just abortions. Like I said, we provide surgery, we provide menopause care, we provide STI treatment, contraception. And we provide that care for all facets of society. So it is wonderful that we are able to provide care for uninsured patients. We are able to provide care for Medicaid patients, even though in Missouri we aren't reimbursed for that care. And we provide care for insured patients as well. So it really helps us when people who have insurance come to Planned Parenthood, because that helps our bottom line so that mm-hmm. we can, again, also provide the care for everyone.
Yeah. Dr. Margaret Baum is an OBGYN and Chief Medical Officer of Planned Parenthood Great Rivers. Dr. Baum, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.